Thank you, Jerry, for that lovely my guided meditation. I was thinking towards the end, there's a certain appropriateness on Mother's Day celebrating, motherhood, birth, the generation of life, and talking as we are today about death, which is a reflection on life. And it's really about feeling the vibrancy of life, and I'll talk a little bit about that. A little later in the talk. I wanted to start with something that we mentioned last week. It's the five remembrances from the Upajatana Sutta. And so, it'll be a little baby meditation. I'll ring a bell at the beginning and I'll recite the five remembrances, or one way of interpreting them. And my request is, to just sit earnestly with each of the statements before we begin the regular part of the talk. We'll ring a bell again at the end. Just like everyone, I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. Just like everyone, I am of the nature to sicken, to get sick. I have not gone beyond sickness. Just like everyone, I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. Just like everyone, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will change. Will become otherwise, will become separated from me. Just like everyone, I'm subject to the results of my own actions. I'm not free from these effects, the effects of my actions. That fourth one is always the hardest for me. This idea that everything that we love, it will become separated from us. It's somehow even more difficult than the I will die one. And I think maybe several people, I think a lot of us feel that way. So to begin, I wanted to mention that one thing that occurred to me as we were talking last week, and something that came up in the discussion group I was in, is that this isn't a culture in which we talk much about dying. Even though it's all around us and it's such a basic part of our existence. It's the elephant in the room, maybe the biggest one. And in every room, It's also maybe the one that goes the most unnoticed because it's so deep. Every time we speak to a loved one, I think somewhere deep down, some part of our being notices that we or they, both of us, will die. Our connection, will be separated in that way, at least. But how often do we notice in those conversations that this recognition is taking place? So for me, to go back to the reason we practice, for me at least, The reason I do this practice, the reason we do this is to see ourselves and the world around us more clearly. Right? We want to understand what's really happening in every moment. And one of the reasons is that when we don't see things clearly, we know that those things still act upon us. They're still happening to us. They're still working their way into our existence and causing suffering. They're just doing that in ways we don't understand. It really is that disconnect that causes the suffering, right? It creates resistance. It creates all of these effects that occur under the surface. And we know that when we bring these things out into the light, when we see them with compassion and kindness and true understanding, that brings a relief from the suffering. That's why we do this, right? We all know that either we've experienced it, or if we're at the beginning of our practice, it's probably some of the reason that we're here, that we've been brought to this practice. So today I'll be bringing up some points for contemplation, some ways that we can access this topic of death to bring it out into the light, into our contemplations. And I guess the major themes that I'll be discussing today, just to kind of give an overview or a preview, I'll be talking about fear, the fear of death, and similarly the fear of death in others. And I'll be going from there to talking about identities and selfing and the impermanence of those identities. And we'll end with an alternative to that selfing, to those identities, with connectedness, with an alternative, a different way of viewing our lives, our deaths, that I think offers a lot of hope and joy. So with that, let's start with fear. I think we ignore death as a society largely because it brings up discomfort and fear. And so what is that fear of dying? I have some ideas. I think maybe other people may state them differently, but here are the ways I would put it. One level, it's a fear of the unknown, right? One of those very deep fears we have of something we don't understand fully. I think also there is this fear of being snuffed out, right? You know, there's this idea, how can all this be for nothing? Do we just live and then die and that's it? There's something terrifying about that. And I'll also argue that fear of dying is also the suffering from losing this identity, a specific identity that we cling to perhaps most dearly out of all our identities. It's this identity of our physical bodies. We'll talk more about that a little later. So when we talk about this fear of dying, some people have a perception that they don't fear their own death as much as the death of loved ones. And I'd like to suggest that fear of our own death and the fear of the death of loved ones are really the same thing. I hope I'm not putting Carol on the spot. Carol Dona last week said something that really stuck with me. She said, "You lose your history when people close to you die." I think one thing that points to is that our own loved ones are a part of our identity. You know, when we say that we love them, what we're doing is we're tapping into this connectedness that we feel with them. They're a part of us. So just a question for reflection. Is that part of why we fear their death? And if so, isn't that really a piece of our own death? My point here is, if you feel like you fear the death of others, but not yourself, I just invite you to do some more digging. You may find that you really do have a fear of your own death buried in there. And it may be that you don't fear that sense of your own death, because some well-meaning but misguided part of us is trying to protect us by avoiding that direct facing of our own death, reflecting it into the death of other things, into the fear we have of other kinds of losses. That it's that fourth remembrance, that separation from everything we love. And I think it's mentioned as part of these remembrances because it really is part of the same thing. So with this fear, a very broad practice suggestion is to bring these fears into the light of awareness, right? And to do so with gentleness and love. If it's a fear of others that we perceive most clearly, fear of others' death, then welcome that into the light of awareness. And I think where this kind of practice ends is with us accepting the fears and befriending them. And I think that opens to a lot of joy. You know, it can, I think there's a feeling that this weight is lifted off of our shoulders. That's kind of at the end of that. I think we all know this, right? You know this because you practice. You know this because this is the promise of our practice with all things in life, not just death. You bring it into awareness and it lifts. So there is this whole field of research in psychology called terror management theory. It started with the work of a researcher called Ernest Becker. And this theory, at its core, it's about a psychological conflict that arises from having, on the one hand, a self-preservation instinct, something we all have, something we've evolved with. So we have this on one side. We want our lives to continue. We're trying to preserve our gene pool, ourselves, our children. And simultaneously, there is a recognition that death is inevitable. We all know this too. And these two things are in conflict, right? What is the point of all of this self-preservation if we know that this thing's coming over here, right? This causes a conflict in us. So this theory says this is the suffering from the fear of death. It's that basic conflict. At the heart of that conflict is a certain kind of selfing. It's an unwillingness to accept that this self-identity, this constructed idea of who we are, must vanish. And so we talked a lot about identities, especially last year, and you know how we construct all of these notions of ourselves, the way our world is, and then we're unable to see outside of it, right? It becomes very hard to observe all the identities, all the becoming that we've done. You know, we might think of ourselves as mother. We might think of ourselves as our occupation. Maybe we think of ourselves as our gender. These are all identities we construct, right? And as the trappings of any of these identities vanish, you know, maybe as for mother, perhaps our kids grow up. For occupation, maybe we retire, or our occupation changes, either within or without our control. And as those things vanish, we suffer. We suffer because we formed the identity and now we're forced to accept its deconstruction. We suffer because we clung to the identities, even as their impermanent natures were revealed, right? It's that unwillingness to move with impermanence that really causes that suffering. So I think, and I mentioned this earlier, I think one of the very deepest identities that we construct and that controls us is this identity of our physical bodies, right? This is very deep. This is, you know, we associate ourselves with this, right? And we can suffer through that in so many ways. Our bodies change as we grow older, right? We have to look in the mirror and see it looking different from decades ago. There's some suffering in that if you're clinging to this identity, this body, right? And of course, death is the ultimate shedding of this body. And the ultimate suffering with death is this clinging to the identity of the body, right? The deeper that identity is, the deeper the suffering is. And the harder it is to look outside it and recognize that it really exists, just as we talked about all of last year with other identities. So in some sense, this is all about impermanence, and letting go of our inability to accept impermanence, right? One of the basic themes of this practice. And I think death is connected to all of our struggles with impermanence. I think underneath everything, every loss, every change in life, everything we wish we could have or never have, everything we don't want, there is death in each of those things. Tuareg said recently, and I wrote down, there is a death in every breath that ends. Right? And I think we do sense at some level death in all of those things, all of those changes, if only we let ourselves. So in each death, a potential clinging, an opportunity to release that clinging. And to think about this in the hopeful way, just imagine how much freedom we would gain if we let the struggle go. If we no longer fear death, why on earth would we worry about losing a job or about having enough money? Why would we worry about our kids becoming independent? You know, what left is there to fear if we truly had chosen, right? You know, it's behind everything in that way. So I want to offer an alternative to this selfing, this clinging, this identity, this becoming, in connectedness. So an invitation for contemplation is, what would death be like if we had no ego, if we had no calcified sense of ourselves? Maybe it's something you can touch at this moment, but it's also something maybe we can sit with and practice. What would it be like? And so an analogy that comes to my mind, I don't know if this works for everyone, is it's a little like thinking about the individual cells in our body and their relationship to us, right? Like, we don't mourn the death of ourselves. This is happening all the time. They are lives in some sense that are being snuffed out, being extinguished. And why? Like, why don't we mourn ourselves? Well, we don't give the cells names, personalities, identities. You know, when a cell dies, other cells arise in their place. And even when they aren't replaced, you know, as we grow older, that happens less. There are more cells dying than being regenerated. But we still don't mourn the loss of these cells because, you know, because the fire of our own lives is still there. You know, when we're thinking about the cells, the bigger picture is the us, right? This whole body composed of all these cells. And we don't really care about all these things because the big, you know, this is still there, right? We still see ourselves alive. The cells don't matter. We're able to see the big picture. What if we thought of our own lives the way we think of cells? That we individually don't matter quite as much. It's our collective that does. So I had a personal experience. It's about 7 years ago after I, you know, after a meditation retreat, I was hanging out with some friends, and we all went to the forest, and I kind of went off on my own, and they were doing their own thing. And yeah, I came to this grove of cedars, and they were situated in a circle, these young, tall, strong cedars, and in the center was an old, dead cedar. You know, the one that, you know, the mother. And it was just so beautiful. You know, it was decaying. It was larger, actually. It was a very large trunk, but the top of it had fallen over. It was starting to hollow out. And it was just such a beautiful depiction of both death and also the life that was springing after, right? And I just had this feeling when I saw this, oh, I want to die like that. You know, that's how I want to go. And I think I don't know if I really knew all of this at the time, but I think part of what was in me was this kind of egoless death, right? This kind of, you know, that tree didn't really mind dying. And it was, in some sense, there was no death. There was just the life that continued after it. Right? And, you know, to take this analogy further, imagine not seeing individual lives at all, but just seeing everyone and everything as interconnected, as a progression, as a continuity. There's no death when someone dies. There's one entity giving back its resources to the whole to be refashioned into some other form of life that continues, right? The Buddha's last words, I'm told, are that it may be that after I am gone, some of you will think, now we have no teacher. But that is not how you should see it. All individual things pass away, and we strive on entirely. Think one of the things he was pointing to was this irrelevance of a single individual, of himself, in a sense. You know, and also to the deep relevance of what he stood for, along with others collectively, what he and all of his students embodied. In this case, it's the teachings that. But we can think of that even more broadly than just being about the teachings and the Dhamma. What do we collectively embody? What does your community embody? What preserves after you as an individual and all the ones you love die in the shape and form of others and of life continuing? So I want to emphasize that there's great joy in this death contemplation. You know, this isn't a somber practice, at least not after you get past the beginning stages of it. You know, it's funny when we began to discuss the themes for this year, and when I heard that we were doing death and dying, my first reaction was like this kind of excitedness. And when we talked about it as a group, I was excited. And I had to kind of wonder why. I was like, what is it that, why am I excited? And I think, you know, this joy, at least in me, it comes from three sources, three that I can name anyway. One is when we contemplate death, we get in touch deeply with this connectedness that I was just talking about. You know, this sense of being part of something larger. And there's a real lightness in that. There's a real load off of your shoulders, from thinking of yourself as part of this collective whole. Another reason, is that being aware of death really puts every problem in life in perspective. Everything feels a bit light and manageable. You know, like I can, in the middle of an argument with a loved one or in some, you know, tension around a meeting I'm about to go to at work, that can feel so large. And, you know, when we tap into this idea, this greater idea that there is death for me and for all of these people involved at the end of this, every individual struggle, you know, it's just lighter. You see where I'm going with this. It's that perspective. related to that perspective, so I'm calling this still part two of Why There's Joy, is that we tend to rebalance the importance of things, right? You know, for example, it was after a death meditation that I finally called my mom. And, you know, like whenever there are always these things that I meant to tell her about how important she is to me and the things that are wonderful about her. And, you know, there's also an embarrassment, or like there are all these things that are in the way of saying those things, right? And I feel like the death meditation, it just gave everything its appropriate weight. And the embarrassment and the uncomfortableness, it just became less important. And these things that she's really done for me, right, that became way more important. And in that space, it was just so easy to say the things I wanted to say. And I'm so glad I said those things, right? So that's all of this awareness of death. So the third reason I think there's joy in this is that in some sense, everything that we experience is a contrast, right? If you look around you at some colored object in the room, when you see its color, what you're seeing is its color surrounded by other colors. You notice the color only in terms of that contrast, right? In the same way, we don't have any knowledge of what happiness is without knowing sadness, right? And I go further. It's not just that I think we don't actually ever experience happiness without simultaneously in that moment holding sadness. It is the contrast. That's an assertion. You can disagree. But I think it goes the same way with death and life. So this joy of death practice is that the contemplation of death is the contemplation of life. As your meditation practice with death matures, you really feel the vibrancy of your own living body, and you get to enjoy it without also clinging to it, without that worry about it fading, right? We're getting in touch with that connectedness. We're shedding that cling. And so it's the most delicious to me way of feeling the vibrancy of life, because it's devoid of that seeking to keep it. Okay, it's 11, and magically, that's all I had to say. So with that, we'll go into our groups. So for those who are new, we break into discussion groups at this point. So we'll be in small groups of three and sometimes four. To discuss what's come up for you in this practice. I don't have any specific prompts for this week, except what arises in you that you're comfortable sharing also. At this point also, many people, so we have a thank you from Deanna saying she has to leave for Mother's Day. If you need to leave, this is an opportunity to do so too. So I'll give everyone a moment who wants to leave, to say any goodbyes or to depart, and then I'll count who remains to divide up our groups. So I'll open the rooms now. Again, the prompt is really anything that's come up for you around this subject. It could be about contemplations you've had, stories in your own life about connectedness, about death, about the dearness of loved ones. It can be about identity and clinging. Anything you're comfortable with. And so I'll open the rooms now, and I'll call you back in about 12 minutes, 13 minutes.
I just want to say, Arv, I think this is a really, really good discussion because it's so relevant for what we're going through right now with the pandemic and everything. And I also wanted to mention in my group that I'm really glad to see that the topic of death and dying is changing in American culture, because I noticed when I went out yesterday just to get some fresh air in the city and some sunshine, I saw advertisements for death doulas. So just like you have a birth doula for a pregnant lady, you know, to help her to give birth to her, you know, child, you have a death doula that helps you to be birthed into a new life. I thought that was the coolest concept. And I was like, wow. I was like, you know, when I go, you know, I will want someone to kind of like help my family to go through that process. And I think that's something that I would want. In fact, I know one of the ladies that advertised her services as being a death doula. I was like, oh, cool. And I think, as I mentioned in my group, that my aunt spoke with me yesterday about, you know, when she transitions, she wants me to be in charge of her trust. And so I'm like, man, I'm going to need somebody to help me through that. You know, so even though I have cousins and other family members, it's just like, you know, having someone like a death doula that's like, okay, this is what is going to be going down. This is what is going to be happening. Da, 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 da. Yeah. And it's such a, I think it's such a cool concept, you know? I think it's just a cool concept.
It really is. Wow. Thank you for mentioning that. That is lovely. I love that idea. It's, you know, it's a great transition one way or the other, right? It's you're walking through a door.
Yeah.
And to have someone with you as kind of a guide, you know, kind of someone. Yeah. Wow. I love that. Yeah. I was talking to Jerry. Jerry and I were both sitting here when the breakout rooms were going on. And a neighbor of mine, she writes for the magazine Crosscut, and she recently posted an article on human composting. Mm-hmm. And she talked about something that just reminds me of what you said, Akila. It's mm-hmm. She talks about the history of our, you know, our processes with death and how we got to the point, you know, a very common thing is we embalm people so that they look like they're still alive. And she was saying that, and she talks about the history of that and how that came about. But it's a really interesting article, and it's very practical about details for different ways we can die. But one of the things she brings up is just this beauty of the idea of kind of recognizing this transition through composting, like sort of very consciously choosing to become soil, right? Rather than like fighting that or, you know, or otherwise ignoring that fact, she kind of sees it as this very intentional return to that life-giving source. You know, I thought that was, so all these things around death coming up, I agree with you, Akila. It's really nice to see these things emerging, right?
Yeah.
I think human composting was recently legalized in Washington State. And that's
And actually, you know, I'm, you know, with the pandemic and everything, I've actually had to face like, okay, you know, the fact that I could die. I mean, it was always in the back of my mind, but like really, really like, okay, I can be out of here, you know? And it's like, it's make me want to live more. Like, you know, there's a concept in Buddhism about being, you know, really fully present. I don't know the exact term, but like,
yeah.
Every time I think about it, like I'm alive, I made it through this day. I, you know, when I go to, you know, my kitchen and make my tea, I smell the tea leaves and I'm like, I'm so thankful to smell the tea leaves and, you know, see my linoleum floor and, you know, eat my muffin and, you know, like small things, you know, you're so grateful, you know, and it's actually, you know, inspired me to, you know, go into selling insurance, you know, life insurance. I know it's sounds kind of weird, but it just, I don't know, it just all like flowed together. So in a way, this pandemic has been sad, but in a way it's been a blessing because it's really helped me to grow in ways that I would never think that I could.
Yeah.
Sorry, my phone dropped. I'm sorry. It's part of on a box. I'm sorry.
No problem. I hope that this pandemic has had the effect on you. I hope that effect is something that other people are feeling too. That sounds like such a positive way to respond to this and to really come to terms with this idea.
Arv, we have a couple of hands up. John and Jean and Amy.
And Amy or Carol, right? Yeah, John and Jean, I think I see your names at the top.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say in reference to you were mentioning about the turning into compost. In case people don't know, I mentioned this in our small group. Recompose is a organization in the Seattle area where you get, your body is composed. They have this lovely facility. I've only seen pictures online, but Katrina Spade started this. And so it's available and you can, you know, prepay as you go along. And that's what I'm doing. And then you, what remains is a yard of compost. So it's just, if you're interested, Google Recompose.
Thank you. Yeah. Amy, or maybe it's Carol.
Here we go. Okay. I just have to navigate Amy's screen. So I'll do the contrast, which is fear of death. As a fear of someone else dying as opposed to me dying. And I tried to think about your concept, Arv, of really when we're afraid of other people dying, it's because we're afraid of our dying. So the way I could fit that in, and it kind of goes along with what you said about the history, was that I become real because I reflect off of people that I'm deeply connected with. And so then I feel deeply connected. And when that's cut off, it's like I don't have that anymore. And that's what I'm really afraid of that losing myself, because I don't have that reflection of myself. And the deep connection is with people who I really feel I can be real with. So it's really being scared of that vacuum, that emptiness, and not being able to handle it because I don't have then a concept of, I think, self. And maybe it gets back to in our group, Amy was talking about selfing. But I don't really know how to get that under control. So anyway, I put it up there, something to meditate on, I guess.
That was beautifully put. I think you've already, you know, you've already stepped through the door for working with it.
Good.
You know, like, I mean, you, I'm sure you found the same thing. A lot of these things, we work on them quietly once we've acknowledged them. There's not a lot we have to do sometimes after that, you know.
Well, and I think that you talked about this terror of, and you didn't go too much into it. I really do believe it's close to terror. So to deal with terror and to face it and try to at least put your toe in into the bathtub is that's the challenge.
Yeah. I think I agree. It's the word terror is appropriate for me. It is really, it's an existential terror. Yeah. Lillian and Nikhil.
There's no keyboard there. Okay, yeah.
I just wanted to say I really appreciated the talk you gave, Arv. I think you took a lot of different things that I've maybe thought about individually, but made these connections between them where I hadn't really identified them. So I just thought it was really insightful. But I was curious about one thing you had said, because it kind of set off this like chain of, you know, thoughts and from the kind of that starting point, which was talking about that, you know, kind of like the collective sense of, you know, kind of taking the metaphor of our, you know, when our cells die, there's other cells that come up. You know, we're similar, right? We die, but, you know, there's other life forms, you know, human or otherwise, that come up. But kind of what that got me thinking of as well, is there almost a clinging in that to the concept of life, right? And that, you know, life itself can be extinguished in a way. You know, Earth could be gone and, you know, there's life elsewhere in the universe. Well, then what, the universe could be gone, right? And is there almost a clinging to the sense of like existence in itself as a whole? But at the same time, does that matter? Because if we're dead, we have no way to know if the universe is gone, right? And if the universe is gone, we're dead. So it's just kind of this weird, you know, thought of like, it's clinging, but does this clinging really matter? Because we can't really ever suffer from it.
You know, it's funny. I kind of went down the same thought pattern when I was thinking of this talk. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, like, you know, we could expand outward from this idea of life continuing, right? I mean, first of all, maybe life on other planets is continuing. But yeah, maybe the death of all of those occurs, right? Entropy says that maybe that will happen. And then I think what you said nailed it, you know, like, probably behind all of this, there is a clinging to the notion of life itself, right? Yeah, and maybe that's something, yeah. Maybe that's something to contemplate. Can we shed that clinging to life itself? My goodness, what a deeper, vast concept that would be. Yeah, I think there's something there. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
You said something else I wanted to respond to, but I don't remember. In any way that I wanted, I should probably let Leslie speak. I wish I could remember it. There's something else you said. But thank you for that, Nikhil.
Yeah, thanks for the talk, Arv.
Yeah. Leslie?
Yes, what Amy said really struck me, and I wanted to share this in case it's of use at all. This last year, I've been going through all of my choices and end-of-life documents and redoing them, reviewing them as part of my own sort of year-long contemplation of mortality. It's been very, very helpful. And one of the things was this list of items that are in my home that either have a high money value or, well, for me, a high money value or a legacy value, and who I want those things to go to. And then I got looking at this list and I thought, well, why should I wait until I die for these things to go to these people? I love giving things away. Why don't I give them away now? And enjoy being able to give them away, and they can enjoy having them. And the thing that was critical to me in this is, you know, there's this sort of thought that to simplify your life, you should look at the things around you and the things that really give you joy that you identify with, keep those and be willing to let go of all the rest of the stuff. Mm-hmm. I do it exactly backwards. If I'm pretty deeply attached to something because it holds a deep memory for me for me, it's very beautiful or something. Those are the things I'm giving away because those are the things that support my notion of self. I am a person who owns this. I am a person who enjoys this. I am a person who thinks this is beautiful. I. And as I'm giving these things away, it's like opening up this great opportunity for me to really know that I continue to exist, even though these things are being given away. So it's like my sense of self is becoming simpler and simpler as I let go of the things that I have surrounded myself with, which I love. I mean, I have, you know, I love all this stuff. I enjoy it. I use it. You don't have to have it. I continue to exist without those things. So yeah. That's just what I wanted to share as a pathway to what you had talked about. It. Yeah, you get it, Amy. I see. Okay.
Thank you, Leslie. That is beautiful. I love that shedding of identity and shedding these objects. But I, that's a really nice way to turn around the standard advice. And I think there's a lot of, there's a lot to that shedding constructed identity. Okay, it's 11:31, so I should turn this to Jerry for announcements and any other closing thoughts we have. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Really nice discussion. I'm glad we're doing it again or more, and so certainly worthwhile, and thank you, Arv, for your talk. Just a couple of announcements. There are a couple of day-longs coming up. Check online. There's one with Narayan, and there's also one with Tim. Narayan has a weekend coming up where I wrote that down. I misplaced the paper I wrote it on. There we go. Yeah, there's a day of mindfulness on the 15th, this next Saturday, 22nd and 23rd with Narayan. They need to register. This Wednesday is the Buddhist Essentials class. That's been an ongoing series. It's going to be about the Eightfold Path.
Not this Wednesday, the 19th.
Right, you are. Thank you. And since I'm the one giving it, I'm glad I'm going to we will await another week. Lauren and I will be doing it. Thank you, Sue. That's why we do it as a group. The Vesak observance, it's the birth, the celebration of the birth, enlightenment, and death of Buddha on May 26th at 7 o'clock, 8:15. There'll be some observation there, observance. And there's other things online. Our morning sits, check them out. There's under 40 group, Thursdays, East Side, Capitol Hill, Monday night. So yeah, hopefully you'll find other ways to support your practice. I want to thank people. I mean, it's there's been I want to talk about Donna now. I appreciate offerings that people have made. It's supportive of everybody at Sims, and so I just want, in case you're not familiar with it, check out the opportunity that's out there on the Sims website for supporting this practice and these gatherings. Certainly appreciate it, and it gets to be a real group support, mutual support. I want to end this day, this morning, with a quick, short sit. And again, happy Mother's Day to all mothers and those who have mothers and grandmothers and so forth. It's certainly the other side of topic that we've been discussing, the beginnings and endings. So let's sit quietly, take this in, allow it to settle, allow the stillness. And considering offering this practice, that the ways that we're connecting with one another here with good intentions, that this practice can be for the benefit of ourselves and all beings. And may all beings live in peace. See you next time.